1. Vaccine subject to availability. State, age, and health-related restrictions may apply.
With a look at the latest first-time jobless claims, here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
The Labor Department report says about 207,000 Americans filed first-time claims for jobless benefits last week, 8,000 fewer than the previous week's revised total. Analysts have been expecting the number to rise to about 213,000. The biggest jumps in claims were in the Carolinas, which are still trying to climb back after Hurricane Florence, as well as Kentucky. Steepest declines, Georgia, New Jersey, and Texas.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is taking aim at McDonald's after Amazon announced that they would be raising their company-wide minimum wage to $15 an hour. Sanders sent a letter to McDonald's basically saying that it's unacceptable that McDonald's is being subsidized by the U.S. taxpayer to the tune of $1.2 billion a year, yet McDonald's is not paying their employees fairly. He again called for a raise of $15 an hour company-wide. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
On Thursday, Vice President Mike Pence fired off a strong warning to China, saying that the United States will not be intimidated and will not stand down.
China is meddling in America's democracy. As President Trump said just last week, we have, in his words, found that China has been attempting to interfere in our upcoming midterm elections. Our intelligence community says that China is targeting U.S. state and local governments and officials to exploit any divisions between federal and local levels on policy. It's using wedge issues like trade tariffs to advance Beijing's political influence.
The Justice Department unveiled charges Thursday against 7 Russian military intelligence officers for their role in a sweeping cyber attack aimed at the United States. Deputy Assistant Director for the FBI, Eric Welling, with more on the victims.
The victims of this illegal activity are anti-doping organizations in the United States and abroad, Swiss and Dutch entities which investigate the use of chemical weapons, and as I mentioned, an important company in my own district, Westinghouse. Federal law makes it illegal to use hacking techniques such as spear phishing to gain access to protected computers and networks.
President Trump arrived in Minnesota within the last hour. The president is there for one of his Make America Great Again rallies. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hutton Chamber Radio entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to Your County at Work. We're going to start by bringing you up to date on weather. There's a chance of showers this afternoon and thunderstorms. And if you had to guess, would you guess it would be at rush hour? It is. At about 4 o'clock. Other than that, mostly cloudy. We've had a warmer day than we expected. It's been up to 81 degrees tonight. Again, some chances of those thunderstorms really probably before you go to bed tonight, 11 o'clock. Mostly cloudy otherwise. And tomorrow, actually mostly sunny with temperatures in the mid-60s. So we're going to have a typical fall day, it looks like, tomorrow. So we can move forward here after this word from our sponsor.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Hi, this is Suzanne Legay. I'm your host of Your County at Work. And we're streaming live here at HuntertonChamberRadio.com. We're here every first Thursday of the month from 4 to 5. Right now we're trying to get our video straightened out. You know, we actually moved the radio station across the hall from the last time I was here, so I didn't find my music for you, and we're flying pretty much with good information, but a few little glitches and hiccups here. So you're great. Thank goodness to Chris Phelan, the CEO of the Hunterdon Chamber, who does know how this is all going to work. So sooner or later, you're going to see me and my guests. There we are. Okay. Thank you so much, Chris. pretty hands-on operation here, but thank you so much. So basically, what Your County at Work does is we're geared to tell you sort of the background stories behind the scenes of what it takes from the men and women that work with the county, and we're about 600 strong. And so we'd like you to know what it takes to have a county run. Who are these people and what they do on your behalf day in and day out? And today, we're going to be speaking to the administrator of the Board of Elections, Beth Thompson. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you.
let me just tell you a little bit about Beth here. Beth started out originally in the private industry and worked one-on-one in customer support, sales, and service, and spent quite a few years doing that until about 2010 decided that it was time for her to move over into the public sector and took the helm as the administrator of the Board of Elections in 2011. And we were just counting on our fingers here before we started that means that she's dealt now with 14 elections. That's including, of course, primary elections and general elections, three of which were presidential elections. And I think it wasn't the first one, Sandy, was it? Okay, so her second major election and a presidential one during Hurricane Sandy, and at which point she had to run around. I'll leave that to you. You tell us what it took to do that, Beth.
Okay. So, in 2012, the county suffered, a storm that we weren't prepared for. Who would have thought a hurricane that took out the shore would have devastated, our small county on the river? And it was a coordinated effort. Within a week's time, we got generators, power, cleaned up polling places, got people ready, and the Secretary of the State at the time allowed us to offer mail ballots. So people voted for about 15 days straight. We were open Saturdays and Sundays all day long. It was a coordinated effort between the clerk and our office to get people to vote. I think at the end, it was almost 20 plus days straight that we worked.
Oh, my goodness.
It was crazy. There was a time when they said anyone who was displaced, just go anywhere and vote. So for about a week and a half after the election, we just traded provisional ballots, got people to send, if you were displaced in Union, you could send your ballot back here to Hunterdon. And
oh, my goodness.
It was crazy.
So what a baptism of fire.
Yes. But it was, it was a good litmus test for me. We were strong. We did well. And it just showed how, great our county works in sync with each other between the public safety and, what we were offered and how well we could work with the municipality. So
I think that's the first time I've heard the details of that. It just boggles the mind,
yes.
Right? And we think that we have some pretty interesting changes to let our audience know about today that are going on. But I think that one's hard to beat, I guess.
Absolutely.
So we know that we can meet those kinds of standards, and I have full confidence that we can meet the changes that we're experiencing right now this election, which our audience will hear about very shortly. Tell us what you're the administrator of. I keep doing this. It's not good when you're on television. Did you know? Tell us what your role is. What do you do as the administrator of the Board of Elections?
So as the administrator of the Board of Elections, we're responsible for ensuring that the eligible voters, residents who want to be registered to vote, can vote in Hunterdon County. We are the catch-all for all the voter registrations. We're responsible for hiring, training, setting up all the polling places. So we work directly with the municipal clerks to find a good place in your community where everyone has accessibility to vote. We change your political party affiliation if you choose to do so. We delete you if you move. We are responsible for being direct contact with DHSS. So if someone passes away, we get that information directly. So we are the catch-all. We actually then take the mail-in ballots that are issued by the clerk. They come into our office. They're locked up. They're secured. On election day, our board comes in, and then we go ahead and count those. So we are kind of, the end game for anyone who wishes to vote, needs information. We are a collection database for candidates who are running for election, who want to contact their constituents. So it's kind of a, it's a really great partnership that we have with the county clerk, who's the reporting authority. She deals more with the political aspect of it, and our job, we are kind of, I call us very neutral, and we just basically represent every single citizen of Hunterdon County who wants to be a registered voter, who wants to vote.
Wow. That's a busy department.
Yes, we are.
It's a busy department. And some of the things that Beth just went over rather quickly with us, we're going to look at in depth, I think, as we talk a little bit further. Who are you accountable to?
So we are
besides
actually,
every single citizen of Hunterdon County.
So actually,
which is good enough.
Yeah,
but
so,
go ahead.
So actually, so boards all in all 21 counties, we are actually directed by the Secretary of State, and then the Secretary of State has her own division, the State Division of Elections, who has a director and a deputy director and a full staff. So when there are emergencies, certifications, anything new that comes down, we are usually put in contact with our director, and then the information trickles down from then, especially when new laws are implemented. So that's really who we are accountable for. You know, we have a set of statutes called New Jersey Title 19 statutes, two sets of very lovely law books, and we are represented by the Division of Law, the New Jersey Attorney General's Office. So if, we have issues or problems, we've always got someone that we can lean on to make sure that what we're doing is correct and that we're always abiding by the law.
Wow. And you came to us from the private sector because you're a Hunterdon County resident.
Absolutely.
Mean, that's how Hunterdon County was blessed by
yes.
having you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, great. So this sounds to me, even when I asked you your role and you just gave us this whole huge list, this is a big elephant. So we're going to take little bites here,
Absolutely.
Okay? And Beth and I sort of said, what's a reasonable way for her to explain? There's been some very, very recent changes, which behind the scenes makes a big difference, but our audience needs to know about them as well. So we're going to take a bite at a time. Tell me, really, let's start in a capsule form, but let's start at the beginning with the federal government and how that all comes to you here and our voters in Hunterdon.
Right. So at a federal level, we've got lawmakers who try to implement changes. Now, there really hasn't been a new federal law that's affected the way that we vote. So they are constantly writing new laws. One of the laws that we always look at to see is on a federal level, let's change the voting to a Saturday. That's been a big law forever. And it really has to do more with the Electoral Commission, the Electoral College vote, things that would encompass the population on a federal level are much more difficult to pass because every state really controls, their own way of voting. So on a state level, we've got our senators and assemblymen and women who constantly write laws. Right now, we have approximately 48 assembly bills and 22 bills in the Senate that have been introduced just since January of 2018 that directly...
Say that again. Can we have that number again?
Yes.
Since January.
Yes. Since January, 48 assembly bills and 22 Senate bills. four of which have been passed since August.
Yes.
Three of them directly affect how we operate in our office.
Probably so, ought to tell us about those.
Yes. So the biggest, so three of the biggest changes, one of them will directly affect any voter or any citizen who does a driver's license transaction at the Division of Motor Vehicles. So if anyone has gone into a DMV, they've upgraded their process and where you have an electronic PIN pad, similar to what you would do when you pay your credit card at the grocery store. And when you do a driver's license transaction, it will ask you, do you wish to register to vote? Starting November 1st of 2018, that will change, and you will have to be asked, do you wish to opt out of being registered to vote? So if you miss that, every person that does a driver's license transaction who is eligible will be opted in, and you will have to opt out if you don't wish to register. So that's a huge change.
It's a huge change. And where does that eligibility reside?
So that eligibility resides on that person answering the questions, are you a citizen? Are you at least 17 years of age? Are you serving a sentence? Are you on parole or probation?
17, I thought.
Yes, 17 can register now.
Register.
Register to vote. You can be 17. You just can't vote till you're 18.
Okay, thank you.
So there's a litany of questions. The same questions that they would ask you to certify on the paper registration are also on that PIN pad. So once you've answered those questions and you say yes to them, you pick your party, you sign, and then we get the information electronically, including a copy of your signature, and we're able to register you to vote.
Is New Jersey unique in that, or do you think?
No, okay. We aren't. I think that we have one of the better technologies. The motor voter law has been in place for quite some time, but I think New Jersey got it right.
We don't hear that
yes,
often, so I'm delighted to hear it.
Absolutely.
Actually.
So we do excel on some levels where if you were to go to, for example, Oregon and you did a registration through the MVC, it could take you a month to get registered because it's all done through paper. So we have absolutely excelled with our technology. We hope to keep getting better and better at this. There's another law pending that, we could register people online. You definitely have to provide the documentation, two forms of ID instead of just one. So there's a little bit more of a scrutiny when you're doing it, online through a secure website that the state would run. We wouldn't have to do that. But you have to provide more ID than you normally would if you would just, register on paper or at the DMV.
Okay, so once that happens, then it is scrutinized through some system. Someone
right.
must prove that valid,
yes.
Eh?
So what happens is all of the MVCs in the entire state, all of that information goes to a collection pot, and then the company that supports the State Division of Elections takes that information, pulls it into our statewide voter registration, and then that trickles down to all of the counties based on the zip code and the that's provided from your driver's license. So every Monday morning when we come in, we could have 200-300 records. Now, starting in November, we could have 500-600 records, depending, on how the increase goes. I think you and I have talked about this where, we've got a really high volume of registered voters in our county, and I really do believe that we capture a lot of people who register to vote. We just can't get them out to vote.
So it's not a voter registration problem.
Correct.
It's a voter turnout problem.
Correct.
Let's hope that we can do something today
absolutely.
To shift that a little bit in our conversation, Beth.
Absolutely. The second law is going to affect the people who work for us during Election Day, or what we consider our poll or board workers. So what they're going to be required to do is report on a form every 2 hours the number of votes cast on the machine. So our machines have a counter so that every time someone hits the cast vote button, the counter will turn. So starting 2 hours after the polls open.
Counting only. Nothing about votes.
Nope.
Nothing.
Nope. We can't.
It just says one person in and out.
Absolutely.
Second person in and out.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So what it will do is every 2 hours starting at 8 a.m., one of our board workers will post on a piece of paper the machine total on so that it's a public record, so any candidate, any person who's trying to figure out how many people voted will, you know, can take that number. They also have to record.
Where does that show up?
So that's going to be probably at the where all of the notices are posted inside the polling place, so someone can just walk in, take notice of it, and leave. They don't have
so
to disrupt.
So it's a handwritten post.
It's a handwritten, you know, it's brand new. So this is going to be the first time that all of us have done it. We've sat down, had meetings with the attorneys. You know, we've been guided. So we're going to do the best that we can to ensure that the people who want this get it and that our poll workers are trained to do it.
I want to make this distinction very clear. It has zero to do with if your vote is, your vote will be registered, it will be counted.
Yes.
This just merely says, excuse the expression, how many bodies in to vote.
Exactly. It doesn't do anything but tell you how many people showed up between 6 and 10.
And 10 then 10 and 12, et cetera.
Exactly.
Very, very important things.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So, and then the next one had to do with mail-in ballots. And this was a a bill that this was huge. And
okay,
this
so listen up, folks.
This was the first time that all 21 counties, the boards, the superintendents of elections, and the county clerks all opposed this bill as it was written because it was difficult to implement.
Wow.
So this bill basically...
Didn't matter, though.
Didn't matter. And we sat down and had meetings and really pressed to try to get this to be changed, but it didn't work. So in 2016 was a presidential election, large turnout. What the law states is that any person who was issued a ballot, voted on a paper ballot in 2016, either by mail or in person, is going to be issued a ballot starting in the general election of 2018 forever, unless you opt out. So
say that again.
Every person who voted on a paper ballot in the election, general election of 2016.
Now, that could have been someone who was away. Someone that wanted to vote early. Someone that just happened to be at the clerk's office and vote.
Anybody who
voted by paper.
Yes, in 2016.
Will be
automatically put into a vote by mail forever situation starting in the general of 2018.
So that's this year right
this
now.
This is now. So the impact... in the clerk's office was, you know, and she is incredible.
That's our county clerk, Mary Melfi, and we all have that notion of her being
absolutely
incredible.
Yeah. So her office in such a short period of time was able to send out, you know, over 8,000 letters to voters, letting them know this is what's going to happen to you and you have the opportunity to opt out. We were able to clean out, maybe about 1,000 people came back, said they didn't want to do this. And then within the next week, she was able to send out, you know, 8,000 ballots to these voters. Mm. And again, it was a coordinated effort. We were there helping her fold stuff, do anything that we can to get this going. So, it was troublesome to implement. You know, and from a cost perspective, you know, extremely
troublesome to educate.
Yes, absolutely. And that's really, you know, and some people love it and some people just don't understand.
I have a personal question for you. I have the good fortune to be traveling to Hawaii on election day. So I went into the county clerk this very week and I voted early.
Right.
Now, does that mean that I now have to receive a paper ballot forever,
no.
or just it was the eight?
Yes.
It was the 16 election that triggered this response.
Exactly, and so at the same time they've done this, they've taken the ability away for people to ask for a ballot for a year or for a general election only. So you've got now instead of three or four choices, you've got two choices. You either ask for a ballot for a single election or you ask for a ballot every election. So the dynamics, you know.
What are the ripples of that? Tell me.
Well, so if you're a snowbird, and Hunterdon County is full of snowbirds, I always look at Tewksbury Township, you know, one of our tippy-top, all the way at the top townships. So the people there love
meaning
to vote on the machine.
Northeast
northeastern tippy-top of Hunterdon.
That's the tippy-top description. Okay.
So most of the voters that vote by mail there will vote on the machine in June, And then when they travel south for the winter, we call them snowbirds, they like to vote on the paper ballot. So the clerk will send their paper ballot to whatever state that they're in, wherever they fly south to. So this bill now negates that for them and basically takes away their, you know, ability to vote on the machine while they're here. So they will now have to vote on paper or do a constant battle and file every election that they want to vote on paper. So if it's, you know, if they want to vote.
It's hard to accept that this is for the good of the voter, isn't it?
It is.
It looks like there's something else going on, but I won't go there too much.
Yeah. So the implications for us is, you know, the tally for an off-year, what we call a midterm election, where normally maybe about 4,000 people would vote on a ballot, we've got, you know, she's issued,
Mary Murphy.
The county clerk has issued probably close to 8,600 ballots already, and we've still got about 30 days to go. So it really makes it difficult for us to keep up with the volume because we're a small office. You know, we'll do it. It's what we do. We're good at it. So, you know, it's just knowing in advance how much we have to do. We're prepared. But it's a very manual and tedious process, and we want to make sure that every single vote counts. It's just made it a little bit difficult volume-wise. We just weren't prepared for this when you start in January and then realize that in August, you know, this
it's
is going to...
It's a whole different game.
It's a whole different ball game.
So... Here's the question. Anyone who has received a vote-by-mail ballot from the county clerk, not someone that walked in and asked for one now,
right?
But anyone that received by law from our county clerk a vote-by-mail ballot, that's their A, only chance to vote.
Yes.
And B, please vote.
Yes.
If you received something, I'm making this up so you correct me when I go wrong. If they received one and inadvertently, for any reason, thought it was a sample, thought it was not important, they need to know that that has been, if they've not done it, they need to do it if they want to.
Right.
Or if they've discarded it or any other happenstance,
they can,
the coffee spilled, I don't know what it would be, but they need to get back to the county clerk.
She can reissue a ballot, but you can go to the polls, but the poll workers will not allow you to vote on the machine. You will be given an opportunity to vote on what we call a provisional ballot. And the provisional ballot will count as long as we know that you didn't vote and return your mail ballot.
And that's why it's provisional.
It's
they want
exactly.
to double check that
so
you're not voting twice.
Yes. So okay. we don't count those until we know for sure that every single mail-in ballot has been accounted for, received, and okayed. So the provisionals are kind of after the fact. And we will count it. If, for example, you got a ballot, didn't vote on it, said you never got it, we will absolutely count your provisional. So when we do say...
Or they can come in and vote on Main Street in Flemington.
Up until 3 o'clock the day before the election, you can get a ballot. After 3 o'clock...
3 o'clock the day before the election.
No more ballots are issued unless by court order of a judge.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I just happened to think of another question. I have several active and reservist in my family, one
Absolutely.
Who is serving in Eastern Europe right now as the commander of a big 3,000 folks there. And how did we get their ballots in time? How does that work?
So the county clerk, again, has her website is absolutely easy to maneuver, easy to manipulate, easy to get information. They would fill out what we call a federal postcard application for military and any person who is overseas, kids go to college. So they would fill out this application and they would get their ballot electronically. So she would issue the ballot and then the voter would vote their ballot. They actually do have to give up their right to privacy because their ballot comes back to us electronically to a secure email address. And then once that ballot is received, it's printed out, it's labeled, it's put in a drawer, and then it's hand canvassed or hand replicated by both a governor-appointed Democrat and Republican on Election Day. So we would take that ballot, reproduce it based on the municipality that your son would be living in, so if whatever municipality that he was registered in New Jersey, We would take a ballot that would go through a scanner, take what he voted on, reproduce it, keep both of them because everything is auditable, and then his vote would absolutely count. So, and we do that for people who never want to come back to the United States, expatriates who are eligible to only vote in federal elections only, and anyone who is anywhere for any reason that can't have their ballot sent to them by mail, you know, whether you're in the military, doing, you know, volunteer service in another country, whether or not you're a student, and it's important to them. And it's we actually have a really large volume, what we call an FPCA. It's a federal postcard application. So we've got a lot of people
service
voting this way.
Military.
Absolutely. Yep. Military, yes. Students, everyone. So it's in it, and because this is a federal election, there's quite a bit. So there really is no excuse for anyone not to vote. And this is, and that's available to anyone in the entire nation, no matter where you live, you know, where you're at, anybody can do that. Because that's a federal, that is absolutely a federal thing.
Yeah. I want to say to our audience that I hope they're getting the feeling I am, and that is that there are really tremendous number of checks and balances, double systems, accountabilities, and so forth that makes this as their vote as legitimate as it absolutely could be, and that the systems are duplicative. I mean, we can have these monkey wrenches thrown in August and still do all the work that you've just described to make sure that this goes as smoothly. The biggest part, not the biggest part, not you talked about mailing 1,000 ballots, but one of the biggest parts is getting the information so that everybody knows how they have that opportunity to
Absolutely.
Vote.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, makes it easier in the state of New Jersey is that every state entity has a voter registration there. You can go to the Division of Motor Vehicles. You can go to Social Services. You can go to unemployment. You can go to your library. You can go to your municipal clerk. You can come to our office, and you can find a voter registration on any website that you can Google it. There's a federal form, one that's for the state, one that's for us. They're all the same. And the requirement is to just get your voter registration in 21 days before the election. So if you've never registered before.
Need to register 21 days before. So that's
October,
November 6th minus 21 days,
yep.
Which is what?
October 16th.
October 16th. So
absolutely.
Today is the 4th.
Yes.
So by the 16th, you would have had to register.
Yes, absolutely.
And you can vote up until 3 p.m. the day before, which
on
is
on a paper ballot.
On
yes.
a paper ballot, which is November 5th.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I just want to get these important things out. If we repeat them, we repeat
yeah,
them, but
absolutely.
I'd rather do that. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll give you some websites at the end that you can jot down so that you know, we'll give you our website and the state's website to make these things easier for yeah. people to find.
And I see note to self here that we, you know, don't mistake the sample ballot that you got.
Correct.
Whenever.
Yes.
You know,
so
with the ballot that you need to vote on by
absolutely.
Mail. And how are they going to know the difference, just to be sure?
So the sample ballot comes out about a week to 10 days before the election, and it goes out to actively registered voters. So one of the things that, you know, we try to emphasize with people, if you have a son or a daughter or someone who used to live at your residence that maybe moved away, we rely on the United States Post Office to be our kind of clearinghouse and give us information, because no election mail is allowed to be forwarded to anyone. So with when someone moves away, we would hope that their sample ballot would come to us so that we can change your address, whether it's within the county, or we can send you a postcard if you've moved to North Dakota and ask you to please cancel your voter registration here in Hunterdon County. So the sample ballot is really a reflection to those of who are actively registered. If you're getting your sample ballot, means you're an actively registered voter, which is permanent in Hunterdon County. It's a permanent in New Jersey unless you move. Mm-hmm. The sample ballot, when you open it, will actually emulate what's on the inside of a voting machine. It will look exactly like the facing ballot of a voting machine. It will give you all the contests and all the candidates that are running for office so that you can do your homework as a voter to see, you know, who you'd like to vote for before you get into the booth. So it really is, it's an informational guide. It gives you the address of your polling place. It tells you what district that you're in. It tells you the hours of the election, what day it's on, and again, all the candidates and the contests and the questions that you'll be voting for on election day. And again, they come out before any election that you're eligible to vote in.
Primary or general.
Primary, general, special school, referendum, whatever it is, you'll get a sample ballot before about a week to 10 days before the election. You'll get that. So, and a lot of people think it's doesn't come from us, but it absolutely does. It is an informational piece of paper. Use it. And if you get a sample ballot for someone who's no longer a resident in your home, return it to us. Put it back in your post office box, return to sender, no longer here. And we'll do the research to find that person and try to get them to either cancel the registration or figure out if they've moved within the county.
Okay, I know that we have a active group of candidates, both of our primary parties, but of other parties, and they're out there in municipalities knocking on doors and meeting and greeting. And very often they carry with them voter registration forms.
Absolutely.
And early voting forms or the mail ballots. Yes. That we're talking about. The names are, it used to be called what?
Well, the Voter Participation Center is a big one.
What it used to be called... When you voted early.
Oh, it used to be absentee.
Okay.
Yeah.
It used to be called absentee ballot, early ballot, mail-in ballot are all the same thing.
Absolutely.
It means you are not going to be at the voting booth registration that day on election day.
Exactly.
So as our folks are walking around in municipalities introducing themselves to you and letting you know that they want your vote and telling you why or answering your questions, hopefully, they may have voter registration ballots.
Absolutely.
And they may also have the mail-in ballot. If for some reason, who knew that you were going to sprain your ankle and now you've got this big boot on and you don't want to, or whatever the case, right?
Exactly.
So you can.
You can fill out that application. A lot of people are fearful when they see things that don't directly come from our office. If you ever have a question about something that you receive in the mail, just call us and we'll talk you through it. We'll help you. That's what we're here for. So if you're afraid that a candidate filled out a form on your behalf and they want you to sign it and you're not sure, just give us a call. And we'll help you. If you're homebound, you can't get out, we'll find someone to help you, and we'll make sure that you get the forms that you need to.
Oh, but Beth, how do I know when I put that in the mail that you're going to get it and you're going to count my ballot? How do I know?
And that is a huge misconception. And as people deliver their ballots to our office, one of the big things that they ask is, this really going to count? Are you going to count my ballot unless the votes are close? And I think that people don't understand that while a majority of the population, and about 10% of the people vote by mail or on a paper ballot, the rest of the people who are out in the polling places and pushing the buttons, we're counting those ballots. We are scanning them. We are getting together so that at 8 p.m. we've got the results that we can walk over to the clerk's office on a drive, and she will upload those. So most likely at the end of an election, the mail-in ballots are the ones that get reported first. Because the cartridges, you know, that come back, because Mary is the reporting authority, she will upload what we've done with the voting machine. She's responsible for, giving the actual results to the public. So with the mail-in ballots, it's kind of amazing that people think that way, but we absolutely count as long as you have satisfied all the requirements with your signature and putting it in the envelope, keeping the certificate attached. Every single mail-in ballot is counted.
Say that, keeping the certificate attached, because I just recently did this, so that means something to me.
Yes.
But explain what you meant by that, because it's important as well.
When you get your mail-in ballot, it comes with instructions, and you're going to vote your
very
ballot.
Very clear ones,
very
actually.
Clear. And you're going to vote your ballot, put it inside of an envelope, and it's got a detachable certificate. But it says, do not detach. And basically, it's kind of a... what we talked about, checks and balances. We want to ensure that the person who got that ballot is the person who voted it and signed the certificate. So we actually go through every single ballot, whether it's 1,000 or 10,000, and we look at that signature and compare it to the application signature that they signed when they asked for the ballot. And it's a tedious process, but it's one that legally we have to abide by and that we do. So once those signatures are checked, they go into a file and they're locked. Election day morning, the certificate is then stripped from that ballot. The ballot is then opened and it becomes anonymous. Your ballot then gets mixed in with the all of the other 10,000 ballots, and then they are scanned by a third-party vendor who has no interest in – he actually flies here from Colorado and has no interest in what happens here in Hunterdon County. He's a great guy. He's been doing this for quite a few years. We have such confidence with him. He scans all of these while we have our governor-appointed board, two Democrats and two Republicans, watching the whole time.
I was going to ask that. So even at the polls, right? There are
Democrats
watchers
and
at the...
Yes, absolutely. There are candidates. There are what we would call challengers, people who work on behalf of candidates, watching what's going on all aspects of what we do. So it is really something, you know, we talk about, you know, does your vote count? You know, we have accountability and we do count your vote. And we think that, you know, there's things that should be improved, things that we can improve on. But we want to make sure that it's a pace that's acceptable for everyone and that everyone has the opportunity to vote who wishes to vote, no matter where they are.
Yeah, and are there any other really typical misconceptions that you hear a lot? You must get calls and questions. And so I'm wondering if you have beyond that, you know, does my vote really count? Having done it in person, I know that in one envelope, in the second envelope, keep the certificate. Then you go in to put it into a box that's sealed, but it's registered that you dropped it in the box
Absolutely. And
so forth. So I've seen it in action.
Yeah.
Someone that mails it in that doesn't see all that would just need to trust, but not when we hear the rigors with which
absolutely.
Their ballot is protected.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the other misconceptions we have is political parties and primaries. Primaries are such a difficult thing for our voting population to understand if they're not used to voting in it.
Okay, let's explain that then, please.
Even though
we're now ready for the general.
Yeah.
But stepping back to the June kind of primary. Okay, good.
So primaries, you know, the function of a primary is it's for the two parties, the two biggest parties, I should say. The Democrats and the Republicans will vie against each other to have a position on the ballot in November. If you're a Libertarian or in the Green Party, the Socialist, Conservative, any of the other parties that we have in the state, you would get on the ballot a completely different way. You would file a petition, and you would get on a ballot a different way than going against your constituents to win the position in the general. And the biggest misconception is about being an independent. So in 2002 and prior, an independent was prevented from voting in a primary. So the laws were changed, and anyone who was considered an independent or had registered as an independent was changed to unaffiliated. And an unaffiliated voter actually can decide on election day or prior to election day which primary they'd like to vote in. So if they are a person that doesn't so much care about what the party politics are and they care about a certain candidate, they will walk in and say, I'd like to vote in the Democratic primary or I'd like to vote in the Republican primary. Now, the caveat to that is that once you vote in a primary and you choose to vote in that political party's primary, you become affiliated with that party. Doesn't mean that you're a member of it. You know, that people kind of get into the grain. It means that you are now affiliated with that party. And the day after you vote, you can certainly file a piece of paper with my office. We can send you one, and we can change you right back to unaffiliated. So it's a simple process, but it is up to the voter to have some kind of responsibility with that. There are some deadlines. It's a 55-day deadline before any election to change your party, but you can be unaffiliated up to the election, walk in, and then affiliate yourself the day of the election.
Okay, so the misconception, again, is that...
If you're an independent, you can't vote in primaries.
Which you can.
Which you can.
You declare at the moment.
Absolutely.
Actually, at the moment, at
yes.
the vote. Okay. Then you can leave that in place, or you can then go to your office and get a form to switch it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So folks can vote in a primary. Can we do a little sidebar? I don't want to confuse too many topics here because we said it's an elephant and we're taking small bites here.
Yes.
But the value of voting in a primary
yes.
as well as general. Folks say, I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. I don't vote in the primary.
Right.
I just vote when it counts.
Yeah.
Right? Since we have the voice yes. of elections sitting here with us, Beth Thompson, the value of primary voting is, and this is from a neutral person that's responsible for elections,
yes,
right?
So absolutely. So in a primary, again, you've got a pool of people who represent the Democratic Party and a pool of representatives who, you know, represent the Republican Party. And those people are vying against each other to either fill two seats, one seat, however it is. You want, you know, when you vote, to pick the representative that best represents you, and that person who wins the primary will then be on the ballot in November.
So
and
it's that, decided.
Yeah.
The primary decides who goes to the general.
Exactly.
Therefore, and let's say I'm the person that says, I never vote in primaries. I just wait for when it really matters.
Right. You've lost your opinion.
That's a misconception
yes,
because,
absolutely.
Say that, I love what you started
You've
to say.
You've lost your opinion. You've basically given the choice of who you want to represent you in the fall to someone else. And I think it's a shame that, you know, if you were born in a different country, you wouldn't take advantage of the fact that we have these free and open elections. And I think that too many people take elections for granted. Your taxpayer dollars pay for elections. You're paying for elections out of your tax money. It's not free to set them up and to pay poll workers and do all this work.
And mailing. I see the mailing budgets.
And
and printing and ballots. You don't think of these things, right?
Yeah. And when you don't vote, you know, and not every single, and you know, you can say, ugh, I don't like any of the candidates. I'm just not going to do it. Well, this election, we happen to have a question that is going to ask you how you want $500 million of your tax money to be spent. And if you don't have an opinion about how you want your tax money to be spent...
In New Jersey,
$500
million.
Yes. So, and this, you know, and
it's on
it's
the
a
back,
question. It's
in the
ballot.
Booth, it's going to be
yes,
in your face. On the ballot, it's
yes.
on the back.
Yes, absolutely.
The print, yes.
So it's not always all about the candidates. It's about public questions and how, you know, the state wants to spend your tax dollars. So if you don't vote, you know, you're really doing your own self a disservice. And we are here to make the voting process as easy and accessible to every person.
And secure.
Absolutely. Making it secure. We were lucky in 2016 where the federal government made us part of their critical infrastructure, which means we get support from Homeland Security. We get the support from the people that count.
Tell us about that. That's
so
interesting.
So Homeland
A lot of
Security,
sidebars here.
Yeah. So Homeland Security now provides us with security seals on our machines. We do all kinds of pre-auditing, after checks. They are also involved in the cybersecurity aspect of our statewide voter registration system. So we're getting
what
the
What does
help.
That mean?
So our statewide voter registration system is the portal that we use to enter your information in that produces our poll books, our voter lists, everything that has to do with elections. And every county has access to it. And it's really important that people know and feel that the information that we're putting in there is safe and secure. And that's really what was critical in 2016 when we are now part of what, you know, that whole cyber team is. I think being a part of it and being involved in these meetings, I don't think I've ever you almost need a glossary of acronyms. It's crazy. Every single team has their own acronym now, and it's exciting. It's a little scary, but it's definitely worth it knowing how secure we are and how much New Jersey is working to improve and make things better.
Wow. Yeah. Even though they passed legislation
in
August that has to be enacted by November. Oh my goodness.
Absolutely.
What a challenge for the clerk and the election board.
Absolutely.
In terms
absolutely.
Of, yeah. So What other, what are the implications? Oh, do you have any more of these sort of misconceptions that we have an we've got a golden opportunity
right
now? Yeah,
the other misconception is, what if I register and I never vote? People ask us all the time, is it permanent? If I don't want to vote, are you going to delete me? And the answer is no. As long as you are living in your home and that you keep up to date with your address, if you move across the street, you need to tell us, or you need to put a forwarding order. And as long as you reside in the county, we have groups of people that only vote in presidential elections. So they vote every 4 years. We have people who never vote in a primary, people who vote every election. So your registration is permanent. So once you apply and you're getting your sample ballot, you don't have to re-register. And if you don't want to vote, you will stay in the system until you tell us you're gone. And that's huge, too, because we have, we get, hundreds and hundreds of duplicate registrations every year because people are fearful that it goes away. So that's
interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And those, the three that I covered, those are the big ones. People call all the time, is my information public? Do you give out my driver's license? Do you do this? And that is another issue, is that when you do become a registered voter, it is public information. We don't give out your ID. We don't give out your signature. We don't even give out your phone number in Hunterdon County. But if you are a registered voter, not who you vote for, but how you vote, and in what elections.
What do you mean, how you vote?
Well, if you vote in a primary, you vote in a general. If you vote as a Democrat, as you vote as a Republican, all of that information is public. And that's how candidates send you their political information and their political literature. That's where they get that from. So for them to enable to do their job.
It's now an app on your phone, by the way.
Yes, absolutely, too. So, yeah, so candidates can put in an OPRA-type request to our office and ask for a list of registered voters who have voted in any particular election so that they can target them to say, hey, I want a list of all the Republicans that voted in the 2016 primary election. And then we would be able to give them the name and address of all those people. And, it is kind of discerning in this day and age of identity theft, but they do sign a specific information sheet that says, they're not doing this for anything but campaigning purposes. And we really haven't had any problems with this whatsoever, just the fact that people don't like it.
Yeah.
What am I getting all this junk mail for? Why am I getting these phone calls? And unfortunately, that's just the name of the game.
Yeah.
It really is.
Because it matters.
It does.
Who your elected officials are.
Absolutely.
It matters.
It really does matter. And again, when you don't vote, you are giving away your opinion. You really are. And I think it's important if you, live here and you care about what your community does and how your money is spent and, what goes on in your communities. Take a look at your sample ballot. Do some research. See who's running. And all of these people have access to websites. You can figure out who they are. This is the day and age of social media. So you can do research and figure out who these people are and what they're going to do for your community.
Good. I have a couple notes that I want to make sure we fit in here before we're done. I didn't break for commercials or anything, so at the end I have to acknowledge all the folks that helped make this possible. But this is so interesting, and I was concerned about if we broke the chain of information, it could be confusing. So I want to acknowledge the sponsors that make this all possible and thank them for this. It's actually a public service message, so we can say that. We were talking, I know, Beth, just the two of us, about what are the implications of not voting? One is you told us very clearly, and I think that's the biggest distinction in terms of the primary,
right?
That you don't get to choose. You get what others choose, and then you vote.
Exactly.
So you've decreased it by 50%, but I would say that the impact is greater.
Yes, absolutely.
So what are the other implications of whom we go to, that your vote counts for?
Absolutely. I mean, this has economic impacts. Again, when we're talking about a simple question on the ballot this year, $500 million of your tax money, is going to get spent, and you have an opportunity to say, no, I don't want you to do that, or yes, I do. And these are the things that we look at where, from my own opinion, you're giving up a value. Your community, from the people who serve on the school board all the way to your township council, your freeholders, everyone is accountable to someone. And if you are
we're
part
all
of,
accountable
yes,
to the taxpayers.
Absolutely. And exactly. And the people that you're electing, you know, are taking, you know, and are responsible for what goes on in your communities. And I think the people who live in Hunterdon County cherish it. They love it. I've lived here for 26 years. I don't want to go anyplace else. I've traveled. I've been to a lot of places. And I love Hunterdon. And I do really hold the people that, you know, work and serve my communities to the highest accord. I expect that they're being fiscally responsible. I expect, you know, them to, you know, follow a standard that I would want in my own household. So, you know, when you talk about, you know, everybody bounces their own checkbook and does their own things, expect that from the people that are running your communities. Give yourself the opportunity to have your opinion heard and cast a vote. Do the research. And again, if you only want to vote for one contest, you can vote your ballot any way you want to. Doesn't mean you have to vote the whole ballot. Doesn't mean you have to vote for every candidate.
That's the first time you said that.
Absolutely.
So many voters, if you've voted many, many times, you know that. If you vote only occasionally, or if you're a first time voter,
absolutely,
you can vote for whom you want within within the party you've declared in the general.
In a primary.
Yes.
In a primary and in a general, you can vote for a Democratic candidate. You can vote for Republican. You know, I always tell people tic-tac sideways, any way that you want.
In the general.
In the general election. You choose the person that best suits you. Or choose none and vote just the public question. It's completely up to you.
Skip somebody.
Absolutely.
All that,
so
yeah.
you are
only
not,
one per category.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But you do have to abide by a vote for one, vote for two.
Yes.
And the machines are set up that way. So you can't.
They wouldn't allow you,
you
to make a mistake in that regard.
But you can undervote your ballot.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're talking about the economics of it. We're talking really, I think, too, about the future. It doesn't have to be an economic question.
Right.
To say that when you vote for a particular individual,
exactly,
that you're voting about your future, your
exactly
economic future, but the future quality of life, the future quality of your taxes in
right
your town,
the
you know, those kinds of critical issues.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you've got some, you know, politicians who, you know, are elected over and over and over again by the smallest majority of a town, and they're not, you know, and that person...
A handful of votes
exactly
in some cases.
Exactly. And sometimes
yes
elections are won by 1 to 2 votes.
Wow.
We actually experienced a tie in one small municipality, you know, and it was unbelievable to us. We never thought that that would happen, and we had to do a do-over.
Yes.
And so when
re-vote.
We had to have the election all over
yes
again.
Yes.
Just for that community. So every single solitary vote matters. Every single vote counts. And
we know that in our county
yes
seat in Hunterdon County.
Absolutely.
Because there's a big issue in terms
oh
of
yes
who someone votes for, whether it works in whichever way it works.
Absolutely.
In terms of what the county seat is looking for in terms of development or not.
Absolutely.
And so there are critical issues
absolutely
that rely on the individuals that you vote for.
And if you've got a voice and you've got an opinion and you know what's going on in your community, that's where you need to start with
yeah
your ballot.
If you want to have a say in your own future.
Absolutely.
It's, and I don't mean to dramatize it. This is it. This
yeah
is where it happens. And
yeah
I also have a note to myself that there are, while these elections are critical, this is the midterm here is very critical, as we know nationally. That's all you can hear and see on the television, but certainly statewide and, you know, who shows up in the in the assembly and the Senate, but right down to our towns
yes
and municipalities.
Yeah.
There's also school. This isn't about this general election. Is not about school boards.
It is. It actually is.
Oh, I'm so, oh,
so
good.
Yes.
Oh,
so
I'm
school,
so sorry.
Yeah.
So let's hear that.
So in Hunterdon County, all of our school boards.
My bad.
are in November. But starting in 2019, if a school board chooses to, they can go back to having a special school board election in April, where you will go back to voting on their budget and the school board members. So right now, we are voting for all your school board members in the general of 2018 as well. So you will see, you know, the assembly. You'll see, you know, your congressman. You're going to see your freeholders, your surrogate, your town committee, and your school board, both at the high school and the local level. And then next year, depending on where you live, if you live in East Amwell, Franklin Township, or Lambertville, those communities actually elect their fire officials and vote on budgets.
Oh, boy.
So starting in next year, unless they create a resolution to opt out, which I think East Amwell has, we'll be doing fire elections in the general. So it'll be a busy ballot for some of these towns.
Oh, absolutely. Town by town has authority or the flexibility. Wow.
Yes, they pass a resolution and ask for questions, ask for, what makes them tick and what they want. And then if your school wants to do a project outside of what they didn't budget for, they would do a special election, and they can hold those in January, March, September, or December, any time during that year, as long as they pass the resolution, provide it to the clerk within a certain period of time.
So you just don't get busy in June and November, do
you?
No, your best.
This is a 12-month a year, 5 days a week job, and I'm happy to do it. You know, serving the public here in Hunterdon County, everyone that we talk to is looking for information, has a question. The most exciting part that I find is when someone becomes a citizen and they come in and they get to register, they take pictures, it's an extreme privilege for some people, and the young
it
kids,
is for everyone.
Yeah,
but whether
absolutely.
We appreciate it or not
and,
is what shows up.
The 17-year-olds who register for the first time, or the 18-year-olds, it's exciting, and we're happy to be a part of this process because we really do feel it's important. I've got a great staff, work great with the county clerk, and we are a well-oiled machine, and I think we stay out of the newspapers, and we do that on purpose. We really are here to